Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Lucy Lethbridge is the author of Servants, a downstairs history of Britain from the 19th century to modern times, which examines the real lives of those thousands of butlers, cooks, and housemaids who were the inspiration behind Downton Abbey and Upstairs Downstairs. Weaving in-depth scholarship with the personal narratives of former domestics, Lethbridge gives voice to a unique perspective on 20th century history from those who were prized for their silence and invisibility. The name of the book is Servants, A Downstairs History of Britain from the 19th Century to Modern Times. It's published by Norton. Lucy Lethbridge, thank you very much for being a part of the program. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
What brought you to the subject of looking into servants?
Well, I'm interested in the history of everyday life. And I think that, for most people, the history of everyday life is the ongoing story of ourselves, and often history is the history of big events, of public figures. And it seemed to me that if I was to get to grips with the changes in domestic history over 100 years in this country, I would have to look at the way that our households were for so long divided essentially into two communities living under one roof. And this seemed to me to be the most extraordinary change that has happened in the last 100 years, is that that we run our homes, on the whole, without help. And that has brought about an extraordinary shift in all sorts of other areas, the way, you know, family life, architecture, class, food, technology. I mean, everything has been touched by that change.
Before we get into the specifics, let me ask this question, which is, why do you think we as a culture and as a society, both fictionally and historically, are interested in this subject and interested in this perspective?
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, I must say, I think the lingering appeal of, as it were, the sort of world of upstairs, downstairs is one of them, is of itself a very fascinating cultural phenomenon of today. Because it seems to me a curious kind of nostalgia. I imagine that most people never think that they're the person downstairs. Perhaps we always imagine that we're upstairs, because the real life downstairs was pretty tough and ill-paid and hard work and so on. But I think it's this idea that the difference between classes is something that seems to have a kind of resounding and international human resonance. A friend of mine was in South Sudan the other day, and she was at an airport in the middle of nowhere, where there was a television that played continual on-the-loop reruns of Upstairs, Downstairs. And so I think that this idea of sort of labor and leisure, of the king and the servant, in the loosest possible terms, does seem to speak to something about the human condition.
You do start the book off by saying that the idea of the perfect servant, silent, obsequious, loyal, is a central component of the many myths of England's recent past. How so?
Well, I think I think part of the constructed myth of the Victorians was that there was a kind of social hierarchy that was divinely ordained, to know your place. This is very deeply woven into the English notion of the fit state, you know, that it is paternalistic, it is by means of which sort of public service at the top and leisure is facilitated by labor at the bottom in a happy codependency. And, of course, the perfect servant, too, so that is one who never questions that, who never questions the status quo, who is apparently happy with the situation, with a sort of unchanging social identity. And part of that is this idea of quiet efficiency, isn't it, that the servant is both a sort of public figure, is both the person who opens the door in livery, but is also silent, the person who facilitates creates this vast efficiency, and you never need to see it changed. I suppose the equivalent would be nowadays we go into a very grand hotel, and whenever you go upstairs, you find your bed has been turned down, and your towels are fresh, and your soap is brand new, but you never see the person who does it. I think that's what it would have been like living in an Edwardian country house in 1900.
One of the things that's fascinating in reading the book is how much variety there is to the backgrounds of these servants. It isn't a cookie cutter of saying, okay, this is the type that would serve in that manor house during that time.
Well, yes, I think what I wanted to do in the book was to get beyond the stereotype. I mean, in the same way that aristocrats get stereotypes, so do the working classes. And of course, there's very little written from the working class perspective. You have to really hunt it out. That gives the lie to those stereotypes. But I found, of course, and one shouldn't be surprised, that there is as rich a variety downstairs of human life as there is upstairs. But it was difficult to find the actual testimonies, the voices, because, of course, you know, the working class are too busy working on the whole to write diaries, letters, books, memoirs.
And also they were such a part of the lives and they knew so much. So there is a great trait here of loyalty and trust, isn't there?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of kind of unspoken deals that are made between, you know, employer and servant. As I suspect there are now. I mean, discretion and privacy are the most highly prized things for the super rich and for people in public life. And these become, of course, much more highly prized the more public and the richer you become. So that maintaining that means a tremendous sort of unspoken understanding and trust, which is occasionally betrayed.
Give us a sense of the interviews that you conducted for this book and what you got out of compiling this information from the people who served in these roles.
Well, when I first started writing the book in 2008, I started researching it, I advertised for people who'd been in service between the wars, and I knew I had to work fast because, of course, they would be pretty old. And I got an astonishing response, not only from people who'd been in service, people whose mothers had been in service, letters, diaries. I mean, amazing material came out of this. But I went around the country interviewing some people who had gone into service at 13 or so in about 1928 and spoke to them about their experiences. And they varied. I mean, most of them reflected the reality that most service was single-handed, the single-handed maid. But there were one or two who'd been in the big country houses. I interviewed a woman who'd been in service in Woburn in about 1935, Woburn Abbey, which is the home of the Dukes of Bedford still. And they had 80 indoor staff for the Duke and Duchess, who were one couple living on their own, elderly couple. And she never met her employers. She was interviewed by the housekeeper. And she spent her 3 years there as a servant to the housekeeper and the butler, learning how to do it. And she never went into the main part of the abbey at all.
Give us an idea of when this started to subside, when this started to go out of favor, the time frame, and ultimately why that occurred.
Well, I think service as we know it, as in the sense that you were speaking about earlier, the sort of the myth, as it were, is a kind of Victorian invention. The Victorians were very keen on inventing a kind of rather bogus Englishness. And I think it was a time of great social unrest, a great boom time, and a great time of wonderful social change, but also of social unrest. And I think the upper classes felt threatened by the rise of an increasing middle class and, of course, an increasingly politicized working class. And so part of these sort of English myths that apparently have their roots in, distant medieval history, is an attempt to establish an idea that there is a sort of paternalistic status quo that can't be challenged. So that you have so that, but that is an invented thing, and it flourishes in the mid 19th century, and then by 1900 it's already on the way out. And by the First World War, the first, you know, nails in the coffin of this world have really have been set in place, and there's the beginnings of a whole new kind of working class, politicized, unionized labor movement. And people simply are not prepared to give the upper classes that sort of deference anymore. But service still continues to flourish because, of course, like as in the States, there was a huge economic depression and there's vast unemployment. And this keeps this kind of domestic service afloat rather artificially between the wars at a time when people didn't want to go into service. And they knew it was the time of service was over, but there were no other jobs. And it's the Second World War that killed it off altogether. There were great hopes in the late 1940s that the girls would want to go back and be maids again. But, you know, life had changed beyond all recognition. There was a Labour government. There was new social housing. There was a new welfare state. And that time, it disappeared.
So what do we call it now? Because certainly there are people who work with the wealthy and the royals, but it is it's a different idea.
Yes, and I think the whole point about service is that it is an idea, as much, I think, and so that what we have now, and you would never call your domestic employee a servant now, because it suggests an unshakable identity, which would be insulting. I mean, of course, domestic service hasn't gone away, and in many ways, it's rather gone underground. You know, I mean, I'm sure it's the same in the States, but most domestic service in this country now is migrant labour. It's unregulated, it's often illegal, it's unprotected, and to an extent, it's more problematic. I mean, it will look completely different. And certainly it doesn't have those sort of overtones of deference that you'd have had 100 years ago. But it's nonetheless very often exploitative, and in a way that is rather hard to actually... is rather hard to challenge. You know, I think this the outsourcing of labour means that you often return to a flat that has been cleaned by a woman who... and it will almost certainly be a woman who doesn't speak English and who you possibly never even met. You leave the cash for her, or you employ her through an agency. So, yes, it's changed. It hasn't gone away.
Well, the book is fascinating. It's entitled Servants, A Downstairs History of Britain from the 19th Century to Modern Times. It is published by Norton. Lucy Lethbridge, thank you very much for being with us this morning. A great pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Again, the title of the book is Servants, published by Norton, by Lucy Lethbridge. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.